Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Gurudev, 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 Jaya Jaya Gurudev. Prabhupada ki jai. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So today we'll be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 5, Verse 15. Jugupsitam dharma krite anusasataha Swabhava raktasya mahan vritikramaha Yad vrakto dharma iti tarasito Namanyate tasya navaranam chanaha Jugupsitam dharma krite anusasataha Swabhava raktasya mahan ritikramaha Yad vrakto dharma iti tarasito Namanyate tasya nivaram janaha Jugupsitam dharma krite anusasataha Swabhava raktasya mahan vratikramaha Yad vrakto dharma iti tarasito Namanyate tasya nivaranam janaha Verily condemned, dharma krite, for the matter of religion. Anusasataha, instruction. So bhava raktasya, naturally inclined. Mahan, great. Pratikramaha, unreasonable. Yat vraktyaha, under whose instruction. Dharmaha, religion. Iti, it is thus. Iti taraha, the people in general. Sita, fixed. Na, do not. Manyate, think. Tasya, of that. Nivararam, prohibition. Janaha, they. The translation is as follows. The people in general are naturally inclined to enjoy. And you have encouraged them in that way in the name of religion. This is verily condemned and is quite unreasonable. Because they are guided under your instructions, they will accept such activities in the name of religion and will hardly care for prohibitions. Srila Vyada's compilation of different Vedic literatures on the basis of regulative performance of fruitive activities as depicted in the Mahabharata and other literature is condemned herewith by Srila Narada. The human beings, by long material association, life after life, have a natural inclination by practice to endeavor to lord it over material nature. They have no sense of the responsibility of human life. This human form of life is a chance to get out of the clutches of illusory matter. The Vedas are meant for going back to Godhead, going back home, to revolve in the cycle of transmigration in a series of lives numbering 84 lakhs, is an imprisoned life for the condemned conditioned souls. The human form of life is a chance to get out of this imprisoned life, and as such, the only occupation of the human being is to re-establish this lost relationship with God. Under the circumstances, one should never be encouraged in making a plan for sense enjoyment in the name of religious functions. Such diversion of the human energy results in a misguided civilization. Srila Vyasadeva is the authority in Vedic explanations in the Mahabharata, etc. And his encouragement in sense enjoyment in some form or other is a great barrier for spiritual advancement because the people in general will not agree to renounce material activities which hold them in material bondage. At a certain stage of human civilization, when such material activities in the name of religion or as sacrificing animals in the name of yajna were too much rampant, the Lord incarnated himself as Buddha and decried the authority of the Vedas in order to stop animal sacrifice in the name of religion. This was foreseen by Narada and therefore he condemned such literatures. The flesh eaters still continue to perform animal sacrifice before some demigod or demigoddess in the name of religion, because in some of the Vedic literatures, such regulative sacrifices are recommended. They are so recommended to discourage flesh eating, but gradually the purpose of such religious activities is forgotten, and the slaughterhouse becomes prominent. This is because foolish materialistic men do not care to listen to others who are actually in a position to explain the Vedic rites. In the Vedas, it is distinctly said that the perfection of life is never to be attained under either by voluminous work or by accumulation of wealth or even by increasing the population. But it is so attained only by renunciation. The materialistic men do not care to listen to such injunctions. According to them, the so-called renounced order of life is meant for those who are unable to earn their livelihood because of some corporal defects or for persons who have failed to achieve prosperity in family life. In histories like the Mahabharata, of course, there are topics on transcendental subjects along with material topics. The Bhagavad Gita is there in the Mahabharata. The whole idea of the Mahabharata culminates in the ultimate instructions of the Bhagavad Gita that one should relinquish all other engagements and should engage oneself solely and fully in surrendering onto the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. But men with materialistic tendencies are more attached to the policy, politics, economics and philanthropic activities mentioned in the Mahabharata than to the principal topic
namely the Bhagavad Gita. This compromising spirit of Vyasadev is directly condemned by Narada, who advises him to directly proclaim that the primary necessity of human life is to realize one's eternal relation with the Lord and thus surrender unto him without delay. A patient suffering from a particular type of malady is almost always inclined to accept eatables which are forbidden for him. The expert physician does not make any compromise with the patient by allowing him to take partially what he should not at all take. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also said that a man attached to fruitive work should not be discouraged from his occupation, for gradually he may be elevated to the position of self-realization. This is sometimes applicable for those who are only dry empiric philosophers without spiritual realization. But those who are in the devotional line need not be always so advised.
ॐ अज्ञान्तमिदन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुमुन्मन्देन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीस्तं स्थापितां येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा गदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं. वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुक्तापदकमलं श्रीगुरुं वांसंसंश्च श्रीरूपं सागरजातं सहगना रघुनाथं वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावभूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां सहगना ललिता श्रीविशाखां तं च. हे कृष्णा करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कान्ता राधाकान्त नमोस्तुते. तप्तकञ्चन गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी विषभानुसुते देवी प्रणामि हरिप्रिये. वञ्चकल्पतरुवेश्च कृपा सिन्धुमयैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवास आदि गौरभक्तवृन्द. हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. Hare Krishna. So thank you all of you all for assembling for the morning class. Okay. Now, this chapter, which we are reading, is titled Narada's Instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam for Vyasadev. It has 40 verses. Now, when one goes through all these verses, obviously for many days we have been discussing Srila Vyasadeva. He had written many Vedic literatures, but still he was not satisfied within his heart. And so his Gurudev, Narad Muni, told him that you are not satisfied because you have not directly glorified Lord Krishna and his pastimes. So accordingly, Vyasadeva wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, from this whole chapter and this sloka, we can learn many things. One of the things which we can learn also is that in our personal practical life also, when we may have taken to devotional life, devotional service, but still sometimes we don't feel that satisfaction, that bliss within our heart. Why is it? We don't feel that satisfaction within our heart is because we are compromising with devotional principles. Very important. Even though we may have taken up to this devotional path, sometimes we feel a little despondent or unsatisfactory in our heart, it is because we have compromised on devotional principles. And then, in this verse, if you analyze in the purport also, why do we compromise on devotional principles at times? Why? There are various reasons and factors. One of the main reasons is that we have a natural inclination for sense gratification. It's mentioned in the purport. The purport and the verse gives us the understanding that we condition living entities because we have been associating with the material nature for so many lakhs of lives. We have a natural inclination to enjoy sense gratification. That is a very, very, very big bottleneck for a spiritual life. In fact, this tendency to want to enjoy, it's very, very detrimental. It will cause spiritual devastation to us. There's a very nice example given.
For example, you see a moth. When there's a fire outside in the night, a moth, when it sees the glow and glitter of the fire, the moth tries to go towards that glow and glitter. And when it approaches that glow and glitter, what happens to the moth? There's destruction to the moth. In the same way, when we are attracted to the glows and glitters of this material world, through name, fame, wealth, beauty, opposite sex, when we are attracted to the glow and glitters of this material through these activities, when we go there, it causes us spiritual destruction. So we have to be very, very careful. We have to just do the needful to stay in this material world. Then in this context of like, we are talking of, you know, that there's a natural inclination for the conditioned souls to want to enjoy through our senses, to want to enjoy in this material world. But that's a very dangerous symptom. We have to try to rectify on that front. In this context of how much this lust can influence us, or in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Canto 9, Chapter 19, in verse 13, it is mentioned that a person who is lusty cannot satisfy his mind even if he has enough of everything in this world, including rice, barley and other food grains, gold, animals and women. Nothing can satisfy him. Very, very instructive. Even when we want to enjoy through our senses, want to enjoy our lusty desires, there's no end to it. Even though the Shloka says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when we get enough of everything, still we'll never feel satisfied. But Maya, a conditioned mind, gives us the illusion, are thora enjoy kar lo na, thora ye kar lo na, thora kar lo na, then no problem. But thora kabhi thora hota hi nahi. It multiplies thora by x. That little never comes. When we intend a little bit sense gratification, again our mind will let us, that for that moment maybe we may be satisfied. But okay, next day we'll think, let's do a little more. And this little more keeps on coming, going. And finally we understand, we have died. So we have to be very careful whenever such tendencies are there in us. Then, especially what happens is, whenever we indulge in such sense gratification, even little by little, we have to be very careful. There are many negatives. One thing is that, the more we indulge in sense gratification, the more stronger we are making our inclination for that sense gratification. Please try to understand this point. The more we indulge in sense gratification, later on it will be more difficult for us to come out of it. Very, very important point. So again, we have to restrain our senses and at the same time engage our senses in the service of the Lord and His devotees. And especially the scriptures and acharyas give us an understanding that if we restrain our senses and use that time to preach about the glories of the Lord to the conditioned souls, it's very, very pleasing to the Lord. In fact, in Servant of the Servant, this book has been written by Tamal Krishna Goswami. In Servant of the Servant book, Tamal Krishna Maharaj mentions, he says that Prabhupada once told him that if anyone sacrifices his sense gratification and uses his time and energy to propagate the message of the Lord to the living entities, then when this person, he dies, when he should leave his body, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will personally appear to him and cover his inadequacies and take him back to Godhead. This is what Prabhupada has told us. So this statement should give us a lot of hope. In spite of all our conditioning, in spite of all our battling as our science senses, this statement should give us hope. Then, sometimes we may be able to control our gross material sense gratification. But then, again, the subtle sense enjoyment is there. We may be able to sometimes restrain our tongue, our senses. But then, this is the gross sense gratification. But then again, we have to be very careful of a subtle ego, subtle sense gratification. Our ego, wanting name, fame, pratishtha. This is really very, very deeply in us. Then what happens is, it is so deeply in us that suppose sometimes, if someone is successful or someone does something good, we don't only glorify him, but we sometimes want to take the credit of that also. Imagine, that is our ego is so much in us that if someone is successful or someone does something good, we want to take credit off that person's success. Huh? In fact, there's a statement. What is that? Yeah. Success has many parents, but failure is treated as an orphan. I repeat. Success has many parents, but failure is treated as an orphan. Huh? Whenever someone is successful, we want to say, yeah, I was a cause of, I gave that thought. I planted that seed of thought in that person, you know. Then the person took it up, you know. But if there's a failure, treated as an orphan, huh? We want to be aloof from that. Huh? Just see how much our ego, we are so much ingrained in our ego. In fact, we have to be very careful of this anartha, of this want, of this ego. Huh? In fact, there's a story. Even when we have taken up to devotional life, this ego, we have to be very careful. There's a story that there were two disciples, and the Gurudev asked them that, you please massage me, you know, massage my legs. So both the disciples, one disciple was massaging the left leg, another disciple was massaging the right leg, you know. Both were massaging. And when the first disciple was massaging the left leg, when he was a little inattentive, the disciple was massaging the right leg, he scratched the other part of the Guru's leg and pinched the Guru's leg, you know. Thinking that, you know, Gurudev will think that this other devotee is not doing service nicely and he'll think highly of me. And when the other disciple, he was not attentive, the other devotee scratched the other side of Gurudev's leg and pinched Gurudev's leg. Thinking that, okay, Gurudev will think that this other devotee is not doing his service nicely and the Gurudev will think highly of me. Now in this bargain, what was happening? Who was suffering? Gurudev was suffering. So just imagine, sometimes if our ego, because of wanting better name, better fame, even in, well, we are doing devotional service, it can cause a lot of havoc to Gurudev's mission. In fact, we as a ISKCON, you know, we have many projects. In fact, most of our projects, all as a team we have to do. There are very less projects where you're a solo person, you know. It's a teamwork mostly, a lot of projects. So if, when you're doing these projects together as a team, if we just give up that attitude that, will I get some name of him? If we just give up that attitude that whoever gets the name of him, no problem. Let me do this service as a pleasure to Gurudev. If you have that attitude, we can achieve tremendous things for a Gurudev. We can achieve and do tremendous service for a Gurudev. Then, in this context, you know, in this material world, basically, you know, this ego, wanting name, fame, wanting to put ourselves always number one, always in the forefront, is so, so deeply ingrained. Through good sadhana, through association of devotees, we have to try to battle it out. But if you take to genuine spiritual chemistry, if you take to general, this whole concept of trying to put ourselves number one, if you see from a genuine spiritual life, you know, there's a story. Once Krishna's small gopa friends, they were walking in Vrindavan. So when they were walking in Vrindavan, Krishna was not with them. So one of the gopa friends said like this, hey, you see someone there very far away. There was another boy walking. So one of the gopa friends said, hey, do you see that boy very far? You know who that is? That is a Krishna. So all the boys did like this. Yeah, yeah, that is Krishna. So all the gopa friends said, let's do one thing. Let's have a running race. And let us see who can touch Krishna first. So all the gopa friends said, yes, let's have a running race. So all the gopa friends lined up. Of course, there was not ready, get, set, go, you know. I mean, those days, you know. So all the gopa friends stood in line. And all of them said, okay, let's run. So all the friends, all the gopa friends started running. And each friend, each gopa person was running as fast as possible. Putting his best effort and running as fast as possible. But not see the consciousness. Why was each gopa running as fast as possible? Each gopa had the consciousness, the intention that, let me run so fast, that I will inspire the other gopas to run faster than me and let them touch Krishna before me. This is the genuine spiritual consciousness. Just imagine the consciousness of the gopa friends. Each one was running as fast as possible so that they wanted to inspire the other children to run faster than them and touch Krishna first. Spiritualism means putting others before us. When we have this attitude, it is very pleasing to Guru and Krishna. And when Guru and Krishna see that we have this attitude and we are genuinely putting effort to practice this in life, they become very happy with us and we make a lot of spiritual advancement. And we should not feel that we are only servants, but we should feel we are insignificant servants eternally. Huh? Sometimes we say, ah, Prabhuji, we are servants, you know, but, you know, that may be a little understatement. We should feel we are insignificant servants. Huh? That also eternally. Say, for example, there's a beach and the beach is many, many kilometers long. And in this beach, you can imagine the quantity of sand grains. So many sand grains, zillions and zillions. No one can even in the full life count the number of sands in that beach. Imagine we are compared, if we compare ourselves to even a sand, if we are more insignificant than even one grain of that sand. We have to understand that. Imagine this whole creation, there's so many living entities. And what difference that we, one living entity, make? We are really insignificant. Huh? So what is the use of trying to become proud or trying to take credit? It has no meaning at all. And it is said that even if you want one drop of respect in this material world, even if you want one drop of respect, we'll have to take birth again in this material world. Is that a good proposal? Birth, disease, old age, death, the three kleshas, enough battering we have got, right? Huh? Do we want, just for one drop of respect, do we want to come back to this material world? It's such a foolish proposal. Huh? You know, once I was going in a taxi, then at a signal, my taxi stopped and there was another taxi in front of me. The taxi owner at the back of the taxi had written, Main Sikandar Raste Ka. Huh? Main Sikandar Raste Ka. You know, means, just imagine, a taxi driver also like, no one wants to take a humble position, huh? रोड का भी एक सिकंदर होना है उसको. He wants to be the leader of the road also. Imagine so much wanting name, fame, wanting to keep ourselves on top is so much ingrained in us, like a taxi person also, you know. He wants to show, भाई, मैं भी टैक्सी वाला हूँ, कुछ अलग टैक्सी वाला हूँ, you know. So, you know, so much ingrained this wanting name, fame in us. In fact, there's a very wonderful story. There was once a particular saint. He was very down-to-earth saint. He was alone. He worked very hard. He would preach very nicely. He made one, two disciples. He kept on preaching very hard. He was a genuine saint. He made many disciples. Then he made a mutt. Then that mutt grew into a bigger mutt. Then he started having many centers. And this guru had many disciples and very, very big buildings and everything. So this guru, he felt, he was very sick. Now he had already become very, very old and he was very sick at many times. And the doctors told him that, sir, you will leave your body anytime. And the disciples also knew that the guru would leave the body anytime. So once Gurudev was really very, very sick, they called the doctor. Then the doctor told the disciples, see, your Gurudev is very sick. He's in his deathbed. He can leave his body anytime. So the disciples went to the Gurudev and told the Gurudev that, Gurudev, we wanted to live as long as possible, but the doctors are saying your health is very bad. They are giving you the best medicines, but the doctor is saying you could leave the body anytime. Gurudev, we have one request. You have worked so very hard, tried from scratch to bring this organization to this level. And you have worked very, very hard. And we want your work to continue further. So, once you leave your body, who we should make in charge in your place? They asked the Gurudev. Gurudev heard the question. The guru could hardly talk, his health was very bad. But somehow he could answer. He told his disciples, make that person leader in my place who had conquered his ego. What did Guru tell his disciple? Gurudev told his disciples, make that person leader in my place who has conquered his ego. And when Guru told this, he could not speak further and the Guru left his body. So the disciples were very sad. They did the last rites. They burned the body. They did the needful with the body. And then the next day, all the disciples, they gathered in a big hall and they started cross-questioning, talking to each other. Have you conquered your ego? Have you conquered your ego? They were cross-questioning because they wanted to select a leader to lead their organization. Finally, all the senior disciples, they zeroed on to one devotee. That yes, he's the right candidate. Let's make him the leader of our organization. And all the senior devotees, disciples, they zeroed on to this devotee on the basis of his one answer. On the basis of this devotee's answer, all of them got convinced he's the right candidate. Let's make him the leader. And what was his answer? When all the senior disciples asked this candidate, "Have you conquered your ego?" His answer was, "I have not conquered my ego, but I know one thing. Till my last breath, I will keep fighting my ego." On the basis of this answer, all the disciples decided, yes, he is the right candidate. Let's make him our leader. So the point is, this ego, it is so much in us. We have to keep fighting it, keep fighting it. Doing our sadhana good, having good association, chanting helplessly. Like, we are talking about the ego, you know, so much ingrained in us. This wanting name, fame, pratishtha, even while doing devotional service. In fact, this ego is so much in us. Suppose if someone took us to the Himalayas and told us that please move Mount Everest a few meters away. It's an impossible task. There's no question of moving Mount Everest a few meters away. But it is more difficult to move our ego out of our heart than to move Mount Everest a few meters away. Imagine, it's so difficult. In fact, we can't even think approaching our ego, what to think of trying to remove it. Now, when I'm speaking so much about the ego, how strongly in us, it may cause us frustration. Arey bhai, kya hope hai mere ko yaar? You know, I'm following the spiritual life. But I would say, understanding of this situation, understanding of this precarious situation, in fact, we should be happy. I would say we should be a step above happiness. We should be rolling on the ground, sitting at this scenario. You all may think, kya is Srivastava ko kya bol raha hai? We should be happy having this anartha, this ego, this amaya. Now, acharyas give us the understanding that, see, this ego, when we understand at this precarious condition, that should really make us helplessly take shelter of Krishna. Understanding at this precarious condition, that should helplessly make us cry out the names of Krishna. And if we helplessly cry out the names of Krishna, that is success for us. Right? In fact, we should see it as a blessing in disguise. When we understand that this ego is not leaving us, when we understand, oh God, that we want, even in devotional service, even as a devotional sadhaka, sometimes we feel, okay, I was wanting this name, I was wanting this recognition. When such things come to us, we should really understand our precarious condition and helplessly take shelter of Krishna, helplessly chant Krishna's name. If we do this, that's, I mean, we have achieved success in one sense. In fact, we should be converting weakness into opportunities for success. We should convert this weakness into an opportunity for success. In fact, we should try to become an invisible instrument in the hands of Guru and Krishna. In fact, and if Krishna makes us visible, that is another matter. Whenever we do any service or something, we should try to stay in the background. We should try not to be visible and do that service. But if Krishna makes us visible, that is another thing. Sometimes we are given leadership positions. So we have to accept that, because obviously some people have to take that position. But when we take that leadership position and when success comes, we should pass that success to Krishna. We should understand that, my dear Lord, I'm a broken flute. I'm a broken stick. I'm a broken flute. But just see, my Lord, even through a broken flute, you can take out such a sweet sound. In fact, we should feel we are broken flute not in one place. We should understand we are broken flute in 100 places. And if you try to analyze the flute, it doesn't look like a flute at all. We should feel that way. But we should feel that, just see, main fake flute hai jo so jaga tuta hu. Still, just see, my sweet Lord, he's taking out such a sweet sound through a broken flute which is broken in 100 places. Just see how great is my Lord. We should have that attitude. And we should understand that this seed for want for material enjoyment, whether it is gross or subtle, or material, gross or subtle, this inclination, the seed, it cannot be removed from our system by anything material. Impossible. It is only when we take shelter of Guru and Krishna that the seed for wanting material enjoyment can be removed from our heart. Like I was saying, like, you know, this seed of wanting enjoyment is so much ingrained in us. In this context, I would like to tell you a story.
Like, I work in Bhaktivedanta Hospital, and I work in the purchase department, you know. I'm in charge of buying things and, you know, coordinating for purchase of various things. So once Yamuna Mataji, Prabhupada's disciple, the great legendary Yamuna Mataji, the great Prabhupada's ISKCON disciple, she had once come for some medical treatment in a hospital. And she was staying on the fifth floor. And she was taking some medical treatment. My office was on the first floor. So I was told by the doctors and the senior management that please organize for a breathing machine for Yamuna Mataji, a new breathing machine. So I had ordered with the vendor and coordinated it. And I had taken the machine to Yamuna Mataji. I had taken with the salesman. The salesman demonstrated to Yamuna Mataji how to use it and like that. So I was in constant touch with Yamuna Mataji every second day. Mataji, how's that machine doing? Is there any problem? Do you need any more help? So I was in constant touch. And I would be meeting Yamuna Mataji also personally. So one day when I was talking to Yamuna Mataji, I had taken some sweet prasad for her. And I gave it to her. And then I was talking about the machine. And then fine, I left her room. Then the next day, again, I had to, the salesman was coming and I had to coordinate with Yamuna Mataji about the machine again. So on the from the first floor through my intercom, I rang up Yamuna Mataji's room. And I told the mother, please accept my humble obeisances. Then I was talking with the machine. And then I told, then I asked Mataji, Mataji, did you enjoy the sweet prasad which I gave you yesterday? Mataji immediately replied, I don't enjoy, I honored it. Immediately I said, sorry, Mataji. You know, even in spiritual life, sometimes, you know, suppose we are having a Sunday feast or, you know, some feast and there are 8-9 items, there's gulab jamun and rasgulla. And the devotee side of us, we tell him, kya gulab jamun hai yaar, kya mast hai yaar, kya taste hai yaar, you know. Sometimes we talk in that context, you know. But see, a pure Vaishnava, what they see, they don't see anything in terms of their enjoyment. They see everything in terms of service and enjoyment to Guru and Krishna. That is the greatness. Then, when we are reading this text and this purport, Prabhupada in the purport gives a very nice point about the human form of life. Prabhupada gives us the understanding that this human form of life is very, very rare. Very rare. We should not just use in trying to gratify our senses. We should not waste it in that. Prabhupada mentioned that we should use a human form of life to re-establish a connection with Lord Krishna. This human form of life is very, very rare. In this context, I would like to tell you a story. Once there was a king. And this king, he had literally everything. He had a lot of land, wealth, property, everything you name it. He had everything. But somehow, this king had a disease, which all the doctors tried curing it, but still they could not cure it. So the king had literally given up hope of trying to get cured of that disease. And the king was very sad about it. So the king had made a proclamation all over his kingdom that if anyone can cure him of this disease, the king will give half his kingdom to that person. So many doctors, Ved, Hakims came and tried, but no one could cure the king. So the king had given up the hope. So one day, a very poor person who had knowledge about medicine, he came to the king and told the king, "The king, I can cure this disease, but I have a list of 20 items. You please get me those 20 items and I'll get your disease cured." King said, "Okay, give me the list." So the king saw the list. There were 20 items. And the king arranged for first 19 items immediately. And the 20th item was a living crow, a jinda kawa. Somehow, in that part of the kingdom and during that time, somehow there was, the crows were seen very less. The crows were very less at that time and very rarely seen. So the king said to this doctor that, "Don't worry, I'll arrange for this crow also immediately." The king called 10 of his soldiers and said, "Go and get a living crow." These 10 soldiers went and they tried to look for a crow. They could not get. They came back by evening and they said, "Sir, we could not find a crow." King said, "What, you people?" The king told this doctor, "You stay as in my royal guest house. Tomorrow I'll send 50 soldiers and they'll get you a living crow. No problem." Next day, king sent 50 soldiers. Those 50 soldiers could not get a living crow. The next day, king sent 1,000 soldiers to look for a living crow. They could not. Next day, the king, he sent his full army, 50,000 soldiers, "Go and get a living crow." Next year, all the prime minister with the soldiers came back and said, "Sir, we could not get a living crow."
The king said, what you people, you know. But the king told the doctor, you do one thing. You stay in my palace for some time. Whenever I get a living crow, I'll give you and you can treat me. So one day, the king was on the terrace of his palace. And outside his palace, there was a wall. And outside the wall, there was a big tree. And under the tree, there was a beggar sitting who was blind. And the beggar was clapping his hand like this. The beggar was clapping and saying, ye bhikmanga ko kuch de de bhai. I'm a beggar, please give me something. And the beggar was clapping like this so that people could be attracted by the sound and look towards him. And the king was seeing from the terrace this thing. The king saw a living crow flying very low. And the crow, there was some eatable on the ground. And the crow was flying. And the crow flew through this beggar's hand. And the beggar was clapping like this. The crow flew. And as the crow was flying through this beggar's hand, that time the beggar closed his hand. And he caught hold of the crow. And the beggar was thinking, what have I caught? And he understood I have caught hold of some bird. And the king is seeing this from his terrace. King shouted, Prime Minister, come here immediately. The Prime Minister ran and came. The king told the Prime Minister, see that beggar is having a live crow in his hand. Go and pay him some money and get that live crow. The Prime Minister also understood. The Prime Minister, you know, he went dashing like a 100 meters, you know, sprint in the Olympics. He went there and he told the beggar, see, you have a live crow in your hand. I'll give you one gold coin. Give me the live crow. The beggar also was wondering, hey, one gold coin for a live crow? Then in short, the minister explained the story to the beggar, why I'm giving you this one gold coin, because the king is having this disease and all that. Now what happens, human nature is what? When we are getting more, we want more. This is a big disease in us. The more we get, the more we want. So the beggar, usme lalach, lobh aaya. The beggar said, just one gold coin for such a great thing. I will not give one gold coin. Then the minister said, okay, two gold coins. Beggar is saying, no. Minister saying, okay, 10 gold coins. Beggar is saying, no. And 10 gold coins means that beggar, for the rest of his life, he wouldn't have needed to beg for ten gold coins. And the bird is slowly going out of his hand. And the king is signaling from there, you minister, what are you doing? What money he wants? Give him and get that crow. The 10 gold coins this minister had ordered, you know, told. Oh, the minister thought, this is my last offer. If I don't give this offer and if this person does not agree, the crow will go out of his hand and the king will kill me. The minister understood. The minister said his last offer was 10 gold coins. Minister said, okay, I will give you 1,000 gold coins. You know, then this beggar heard 1,000. You know, he could not believe. He, with his hand, he just left his hand and said, 1,000. And he left his hand open, you know, with that exclamation. And the bird flew. The king's minister with his hand on his head like this. The king also hand on his head like this. The minister told the beggar, what did you do? You let that crow off. The beggar said, sir, don't worry. I'll immediately start clapping from now. And as the crow gets caught in my hand, I'll give it to you. And you give me those 100 gold coins. This beggar, for the rest of his life, he clapped his hand. But he did not get the crow. Now this story is very, very instructive. This human life is like that crow. Ek bar haath mein aa gaya. If it's there once, let's make full use of it. Once this human life gets out of hand, we don't know when we'll get this human life again. So let's cash on this opportunity of this human life. Let's use it for devotional service. Let's use it to serve Guru and Krishna so that we can get out of the cycle of birth and death. You know, and when we're talking of this human life, so rare, and sometimes just this one human birth, maybe of 70 or 80 odd years, sometimes we feel, wow, this is life and all, and we want to enjoy it through our senses, and you know, we want to make a big palace. But if you analyze this life of maybe average life of 70, 80 years, if you analyze it from the time of eternity, from the time when the creation was made until now, this human life of 70 or 80 odd years is like a flash of lightning. Even I would say it's less than that. Imagine for a flash of lightning, we want for our ego, strategy karte, what politics we do, what planning we do for a settle and cross sense gratification. You know, it's so foolish. It's, you know, such a foolish thing. We should just do the needful. In fact, there's a story. There was one sage. He had the benediction that you will live as many years as the hair on your body. And this sage had a lot of hair on his body. And he was always just living under a tree, sleeping. And for his bath, he would go to the river and just again just have bath and again sleep under the tree. So the villagers in that area, they went to the sage and said, "Sir, you are such a great sage. We want to build a hut for you." And this saint said, "Why you want to build a hut? Life is so temporary. So temporary. I will be dying anytime. You know, I'll be dying. Life is so temporary. Why you want to make a hut for me?" Now imagine a sage who has that benediction. He's saying his life is temporary. Why to give so much bhava? Why to give so much, you know, thought to this human form of life? If a person of that person, of that level can think, you know, we person who have just 80, 70 years, or 90, 100, you know, how much temporary we should be, how much unattached we should be to our body. You know, just dedicating every moment to serve our Guru and Krishna. That should be our only aim and goal of life. You know, this odd years of 70 or 80 years which we live, or maybe 100, we are so much caught up. I will give you two things. Dr. A. Thakur was a very famous cardiologist in North India. Very famous, very famous. Now, he had gone to Chennai for a cardiologist conference. And the world's best cardiologist had come to Chennai. And there was a conference going on. The best cardiologist. He was also in the panel. He got heart attack in the conference, in the middle of the conference. And he died on the spot. True story. Imagine he being one of the best cardiologists, surrounded by the world's best cardiologists. But tab bhi jab bulawa aata hai na, wo cardiologist ka cardiologist bhi rahe, uska sir ka sir rahe, ya you know, Hindi mein bolte uska baap ka baap bhi rahe. Nothing can save you. This world is so temporary. There's no insurance. You can't assure a moment that you'll be alive, you know. This life is so temporary. In my society, you know, one young boy, 24 years old, no health problems, he got a heart attack and died. 24 years. You know, here at least every one of us above 24. I pray may you live as long as possible, 100 years and plus. But can anyone sitting here give a guarantee in the next 7 minutes we'll be alive? No, we cannot. So we should really just use this body for only one purpose. To serve Guru and Krishna. That should be our only aim. We should be breathing that. We should be thinking of that. We should be dreaming that. We should be planning just that one thing in life. How to serve best Guru and Krishna. Okay. And then, okay. Today is the disappearance of Loknath Goswami. So we'll just speak some few things about Loknath Goswami ji. So Loknath Goswami ji was, he was born in the Jeshore district of Bangladesh. And his father's name was Padmanabha and mother's name was Sita. And this whole family, they were great devotees of Advaita Acharya. And Loknath Goswami, he took shelter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navdeep. And after some time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Loknath Goswami that, "Now you should go to Vrindavan. You be there." So Loknath Goswami with association Bhugar Goswami, both of them went to Vrindavan. So when they were staying in Vrindavan for quite some time, then Loknath Goswami came to know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken sannyas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has gone for a yatra to South India. So Loknath Goswami wanted to desperately meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Loknath Goswami went to South India looking for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But when he reached South India, he came to know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has gone back to Puri. So Loknath Goswami immediately left for Jagannath Puri. When Loknath Goswami reached Puri, he came to know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is left for Vrindavan. So then immediately Loknath Goswami left for Vrindavan. When he went to Vrindavan, he came to know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has left for Prayag. Then hearing this, Loknath Goswami just became unconscious. And when he regained his consciousness, then it was already late at night. So immediately Loknath Goswami decided that tomorrow early morning, I will immediately leave for Prayag. But that night, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the dream of Loknath Goswami and told him that this is my Leela. You please stay in Vrindavan. By staying in Vrindavan, you will experience my association. You will experience me. So Loknath Goswami stayed in Vrindavan. And then There's a very nice instruction here. I'm like, obviously there are many things which we can learn from Loknath Goswami's story and example. One thing is that we should not try to look for God. By just serving the instructions what the Lord has given in the scriptures and serving the instructions of Gurudev, we can feel the presence of Krishna in our heart. So Loknath Goswami started staying in Vrindavan. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had told Loknath Goswami that please stay in Vrindavan. And after some time, Rupa Goswami, Jeev Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Gopal Bhatt Goswami, all these great saints will come, you stay with them. And then after some time, all these six Goswamis came to Vrindavan and Loknath Goswami would stay with them. Then one day, Loknath Goswami, near the Khandivar forest, near Kushori Kund, he was just meditating. And he was meditating and he had a very deep desire to worship deities. Then when he was meditating on that desire, suddenly someone appeared to him and gave him Radha Krishna deities. And this person just immediately, miraculously, just disappeared. So Loknath Goswami was little, you know, puzzled, ki, where is that person gone? And he saw the deities. And the deities, they spoke that my name is Radha Vinod. And I have been staying in this forest for a long time. And I was waiting for you to come. And now I have come on my own accord to you. Now you please take care of me. So when Loknath Goswami heard this, started trembling, you know. And then the deity spoke to Loknath Goswami that, I am very hungry. Please make something for me. I am hungry. So Loknath Goswami made some nice bhoga and he offered to the Lord. And the Lord had it. And then Loknath Goswami, he would carry these deities in a bag made of cloth. And he would hang them around his neck. And that was the temple of the Lord. Loknath Goswami, the deities, Radha Vinod, would always be hanging around Loknath Goswami's neck and they would be traveling from different place to place. So today on this day, we could beg and pray to Loknath Goswami that please give us some tinge of the devotion which you had for Radha and Krishna. Please give us some tinge of that bhakti in us. And we can, when we hear the pastimes of these great Vaishnavas, it increases faith in Lord Krishna in our heart. Whenever we hear glories or pastimes of these great Vaishnavas, it increases faith in our heart. In terms of faith, there's a saying that if Krishna takes you to the edge of a cliff, if Krishna takes you to the edge of a very dangerous cliff, do not doubt Krishna's intentions. When you fall from the cliff, Krishna will be there to catch you. Either Krishna will be there to catch you, or he will teach us how to fly. So we should have faith in Krishna. Whatever happens, Krishna, whatever he does in life is to our ultimate good and ultimate best. So it's time. So we will end the class here. If someone has any comments, any questions, we could try to take it up. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.